Small business owners are always passionate about their work, and they have a lot on the line. Let Verizon help champion your small business dream. Whether you own a small business or scaling one or starting one from scratch, you need to get ready for Verizon Small Business Days. From April 22nd through April 28th, you can partner with Verizon business experts for small business support. During Verizon Small Business Days, you can receive a free tech check with a one-on-one meeting with a Verizon business expert. Plus, Verizon business experts will provide you with personalized advice and solutions that are tailored to your specific small business needs. Take advantage of special offers and deals during Verizon Small Business Days and get more for your business. Verizon has your back because they know small businesses can make a big difference. Don't miss out. Book an appointment today. Just call 1-800-483-4428 or go to verizon.com/smallbusiness.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive, where drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. Plus, auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Quote now at progressive.com to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates, national average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
I'm Gary O'Reilly.
And I'm Chuck Nice.
And this is Playing with Science. Today we enter Twitterdom through the vast multiverses of Neil deGrasse Tyson's mind and light up the cerebral spheres that engage with the complex and ever-evolving world of sport.
Yeah, so did you change your meds? Hey, Neil deGrasse Tyson has many opinions and many things which he chooses to share on a regular basis, but he has a heartfelt connection to sports that's constantly filtered through his scientific lens on Twitter.
So, when you play with science, there can be no better playdate than the man himself.
Yes, thanks for joining us right now. It's the one,
the only,
the inimitable Neil deGrasse Tyson! You like that?
Scared?
Where'd you get the gong? Yeah. Oh my gosh. Normally that's how you get someone off the stage, right? I saw the gong show.
All righty. No, don't take it personally.
No, that is a royal entrance right there. That's what the gong is for.
Now, normally I'm sitting there.
That's right, sir.
Now, you just took your own damn show. Now I'm a guest on your damn show.
Weirding you out? Are you comfortable? Are you okay?
I'll get used to it. That's all right.
It doesn't happen without you, no matter what, though. What's up?
Neil's going to start asking us questions. He won't be able to help himself.
Yeah, no, I'll happily be your guest on this show.
Yeah, that's please don't ask us any questions.
It means I feel loved. Yeah.
That's very cool. Thanks for being here, man. We appreciate it. Yeah. And of course, you are a prolific tweeter.
Yeah, but it's not. So a couple of things. First, you said I have many opinions, which I do, but I hardly ever tweet opinions.
This is true.
Okay, the most opinionated tweet I ever posted, which was clearly an opinion, was after Star Wars The Force Awakens, I said, BB-8 is way cuter than R2-D2.
Right.
That was clearly an opinion.
That's an opinion.
And of course, there were fights and things.
Oh, you kidding me? Yeah.
That was generational fights.
Yeah, without a doubt.
What I try to is not give you an opinion because, frankly, I don't care if you share my opinion on anything.
Okay.
What I care is that whatever opinion you come up with, it is informed with objectively verifiable truths.
Nice. There you go. This man is always about science education, right down to the tweets.
Then make whatever old damn opinion you want. Right. I don't care, but I mean, I care broadly, but specifically person to person.
Right.
Just I'll give you more information that you may have had before
right.
to help you understand your decisions. That's and all.
It's funny. So
on behalf of the universe.
Thank you. I like that. Yeah. I'm representing the universe in my presence here today.
Well, and the funny thing, when you talk about opinions, and I caught the tail end eavesdropping of you having a conversation with somebody, and you were saying that when scientists talk to people, if you say things that are just patently unscientific—
Or just false.
Or false.
Yeah.
and you just refuse, you just blindly adhere to those things,
yeah,
we're not going to argue with you.
You just walk away.
You just walk away.
Yeah, yeah. There's the old adage, which is mostly true,
right,
that if an argument lasts more than 5 minutes, then both sides are wrong.
Nice.
Ooh, there's a timeline on an argument.
That makes sense, though, you know, when you think about it.
Yeah,
right? Because facts are facts, and, you know.
Yeah, and by the way, in science, it's not like we don't argue, but when we argue with a certain fundamental premise, which perhaps does not exist with other kinds of arguments, other spheres of argument. In science, you and I argue, it's built on the premise that either I'm right and you're wrong,
right,
or you're right and I'm wrong, or we're both wrong.
Right.
And the fact that we're arguing is that there's insufficient data to resolve this yet.
Right.
So we use our arguments to help shape what next data we're going to put on the table so that we can get over with that argument, agree, and go on to the next problem.
Right. But the argument in science is not for the sake of argument, like, you know, I know I am, but what are you? You know,
just, I know you are, but what am I?
Your mama, right? You know,
99% of the normal argument.
Right. It's really.
Yeah, in science, there are no your mama jokes.
Right. No your mama jokes.
Which I think is a good thing.
That would be fun. If I get up and give a talk at a scientific conference and somebody doesn't like it, say, yo mama. I'd have no rebuttal to that. Right,
exactly. So, what we're talking about today are the tweets of Neil's with respect to sports,
yes,
which is...
You called all my sports tweets?
Yes, we did, my friend.
There's a few, but it's not like that's what I do, right?
No, but there's more than 40 of them.
40? Okay,
we were able to
5,000. Okay, so there's one in 100 is a sports tweet.
Is a sports tweet, right, you know? And a lot of times they surround very significant sporting events.
Yes, yes, just to keep it in the mood.
Right.
Yes,
so yeah. It's like the Super Bowl or the Olympics.
Your gray matter.
Yes, it does.
Even if it's 1 in 100.
And you are an athlete, you know. I mean,
40 pounds ago, yes.
I think we've established we're all. Everyone here is an ex-athlete.
So you know, I'm sure that you know you're a person who looks at. So as a former athlete, you were a wrestler.
But just can I tell you, since we're like three guys here,
all right.
So you know where how I wear my 40 pounds. So a lot of it is everywhere, but of course we're guys, so most of it just goes to the belt.
The gut, right.
But I've always had broad shoulders and a large chest. And my chest, even at my chubbiest, was always bigger than my waist. So all you have to do is cut a jacket, a sport coat, to come in at the waist a little bit.
Right.
And then it still cuts, and you don't look like some slob that, you know, that clearly was once in shape but is no longer.
There you go.
So I've been able to fake this extra weight in my
next week on Playing with Science, we'll have colors for spring and as well as tailoring and other ideas.
Haberdasheral advice from Playing with Science. Okay.
So, you know, we like to start off every show with a clip, a sporting clip that is significant.
Okay. Yeah.
So we have something. You made a... You wrote a tweet about Usain Bolt. I thought it was very cute. But speaking of Usain Bolt, who, by the way, for those of you who are interested, we are going to be doing a show with Usain Bolt, who has expressed his interest.
He's going to come on your show?
No, he wants to talk
catch
to
him
you.
First.
He wants to talk to me.
He wants to do an interview with you that we will then take and put on the show.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah.
If we can catch him.
If we, look at that.
If you can catch him. That was good.
So anyway, he is the fastest man in the world, and probably the greatest sprinter of all time. And here's a little ditty from him in something called the Rio Olympics.
Gatlin got a good enough start. Bolt was a bit slow to begin. He's got some work to do. Gatlin's in front. Bolt stretching out now. He's coming after him. He's immortal now. Usain's done it. Gatlin challenge for the silver medal. 9.80 all the way from Beijing to London and now to Rio. It is one of the greatest athletic achievements of all time, if not the very greatest.
Wow. There you have it. What was great about it?
So here's the way. I got to jump in right now.
Jump in right now.
Jump in.
So he's not the fastest man in the world. He's the fastest human there ever was.
Wow.
Just to be clear.
It is a distinction.
Okay, this is why we have measuring devices.
Okay.
So for him to say, one of the greatest, no, if he's the fastest human there ever was,
It is the greatest.
Thank you.
It's not one of the greatest.
It's not about an opinion at that point.
Right. These are numbers that we're talking about.
This is the good
about.
Thing about the methods and tools of science.
Right.
It renders opinions irrelevant.
Right.
So I know where you were going with that. The winner of the 100-meter dash is considered the fastest man in the world.
Correct.
You set a world record in it. You're the fastest person there ever was.
Right.
Yeah. There it was.
Wow. That's pretty cool, actually.
Okay.
Think about it.
So, oh, you got my tweet. You got my tweet.
That's your tweet. Okay. I really liked it. You caught some flack on this from some haters because you used Bolt, the dog, who, by the way, great movie if you have kids, which I do, young children. I took them a few years ago, and it's a cute movie, and it's about a dog who's super, super fast. And so why don't you read the tweet?
Okay, so in this tweet, this is not from memory. You have it up on a screen that I'm looking at. Okay. Yeah. So I just thought people should know how fast Bolts are.
Right.
So I said, how many Bolts can I come up with? So there's Usain Bolt. Uh-huh. There's a Lightning Bolt.
Right.
And I thought I remembered some other sort of cartoon character Bolt. And sure enough, there was the dog from the movie.
Right.
So then I looked up the speed, the average running speed of that species of dog. Okay, because there was a real species of dog portrayed in the film.
Right.
So I got all these three numbers together and I put it up in metric units. So here we go.
So here's the tweet.
100,000 meters per second, mm-hmm. Lightning Bolt.
There you go.
Yep.
13.4 meters per second, Bolt. 10.4 meters per second, Usain Bolt.
Usain Bolt.
And I mashed three images together, one of the Lightning Bolt, the dog, and Usain. That's all I did.
And that's
not an opinion here.
Right.
I'm just giving you information.
And so a lot of people were incredulous that a human being could run 10.4 meters in 1 second.
Oh, they didn't see it in this context.
Right.
Yeah.
Because there's 10 meters.
Right.
1 second is short. 10 meters is how far you got to go in four downs to get a first down.
Exactly.
And they couldn't quite.
People were like, okay.
Conceptualization
right.
of so, time and distance becomes an issue.
Okay, I did not know because I can't track everybody's comment about it.
So I read the comments after I read this, and a lot of people were like, that's impossible. 10.4 meters in 1 second, but it's over 100 meters.
Right. And in fact, it looked like he didn't hit his stride until 70 meters or so.
He doesn't. He never does.
Oh, he's still accelerating at 100 meters.
Yeah, but that's the whole thing about Usain Bolt. Against the shorter sprinters, he takes one or two steps less.
Okay.
So the power transference from when his foot hits the track and then goes mm-hmm. allows him to become that much faster in the latter stages.
It's probably also more efficient because he takes fewer steps to go the same.
Right. Yeah.
And the experts are saying he may not be the apex of human sprinting. Somebody at some stage, another outlier, will turn up and go even faster.
Well, what's that person going to look like?
Yeah, I don't know.
How long are their legs going to be?
Well, that's just it. He has redefined the shape. If you think of sprinters in the past, they were little pocket rockets.
Yeah, yeah.
He's come along at 6'5", but he's probably, you remember the great athlete Carl Lewis?
Of course. Uh-huh.
He's probably 5 inches taller.
Carl Lewis is 5'10 or something.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
6'5".
Yeah.
And much bigger.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And just that much quicker.
Yeah, yeah. So it was a delight to watch him run. Of course, I mean on TV I saw it, but
of course, yeah.
So the meters per second transfer of how to think about speed to whatever extent that would have helped, that's great. What concerns me is that we have an educational system where someone could think that's wrong.
Yes.
Then assert that it's wrong,
and which they did, by the way.
Right. So rather than say, wow, I never thought about it that way before. Let me investigate to see if Tyson is right, rather than assert that I'm wrong.
Right.
Because
correct
people, just so you know, I think about this stuff before I tweet it.
Right.
That'll just like randomly, let me throw down some numbers. No. I put way more thought into my tweets than you will ever believe, given how much thought most people put into their tweets. Don't put into their tweets.
Right.
So just so you know.
But the fact is, it's possible to run 10.4 meters per second.
Right, because a 100-meter dash takes 10 seconds, therefore it's 10 meters per second.
There you go. It's really simple.
That's
simple math.
That's math, not even 101. That's like...
But the thing is, I think for a lot of people is, like you say, you see 10 meters and you see 1 second, and you think of somebody coming from a standing position and going 1 second and they've gone 10 meters.
Right, right.
You know, that's the way people think.
Another impasse in this mental impasse occurred as trains were getting faster.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Someone said, oh, will we ever go a mile a minute? It was that mile and minute. You never had those in the same sentence before.
Right. Yeah.
And hell, that's just 60 miles an hour.
That's all it is. It's 60 miles an hour.
There's 60 minutes in an hour.
Right.
Mile a minute.
Right.
There you go.
And people, and nobody would blink twice at that right
now. Not today, because we... But
you'd complain if you were doing 60 miles an hour.
Only 60 miles an hour.
Bullet train or one of the super fast trains in Europe. Yeah.
Okay. Right. Well, that was great, man. That was that was really cool. And I just love the fact that no matter what you tweet, it's always controversial to someone.
Yeah, but that's not my... I'm not trying to be controversial. By the way, I have tweets that I read them and say, you know, that's probably controversial. I'm not going to tweet that. One day, I'm going to collect all the ones that I knew in advance would be controversial and chose not to tweet them.
Sweet.
Okay?
You're going to data dump them on everybody.
I'm going to do a data dump. I said, you think I'm trying to be controversial?
Here's the controversy.
You have no idea. Here you go.
Nice.
Okay?
Wow. Tyson's new book of controversy.
Yeah. We got to find a way to make that into a book.
Okay.
Neil Tyson.
We got one here.
The world.
So this is from the 2012 Olympics.
All right.
I said, how about a Mars Olympics? Yes, all athletes would suffocate. Ignoring that complication, way cooler than an Earth Olympics. That's all.
Way cooler than an Earth Olympics.
I'm setting you up for tweets that follow.
Yes, obviously. I was going to say, because when you say way cooler, then you actually give us some examples of why an Olympics on Mars, or pretty much any sporting event on Mars, might be cool.
It's also a couple hundred degrees below zero on Mars, so way cooler has double meaning there.
I think we picked that one up.
Picked that up, okay.
All right, so let's look at one of the Mars tweets, and this is cycling on Mars.
Okay, okay? All right.
So go ahead.
All right, so this is again during the summer 2012 Olympics. If there was cycling on Mars, try Olympic Mons, a volcanic mountain five times taller than Mont Blanc in the Alps.
Wow.
So you think you got tall mountains here? No, the tallest mountains and the deepest valleys are not on Earth, in the solar system. They're on Mars, they're on the moon, so we ain't got nothing. We're not winning those contests.
Because you know this, the atmosphere on Mars is how much less than the Earth's atmosphere?
It's about 1/100th. Yeah.
So if we had
pressure, atmospheric pressure. So in other words, for every breath you take on Mars, there's 1/100th the amount of air in that breath. And it would be on
Earth. As an athlete, altitude becomes your enemy in terms of the oxygenation.
If you're performing in altitude, but the ideal way to do this is you train in altitude and then compete at sea level.
Right.
What we need to do is go to Mars.
That's why Sherpas don't have any problem getting up the mountain while all the tourists are like,
that's right.
All the baggage.
I need more oxygen.
So here's what you do. Even
you
better.
Train on Mars.
I'm going to make a suggestion that's never been made before. You ready?
Yeah, here we are.
You drain the Pacific Ocean.
Okay.
Oh.
And then hold the Olympics at the bottom of the Marianas Trench. But you train at high altitude, but now you compete at the bottom of the
bottom
which
of
is
the trench.
6 miles down. Now every breath of air has way more oxygen than at sea level. And so now you have heroic feats before. You don't even have to dope your blood. Mm. The air itself will put the oxygen and force it right into your lungs.
Sure, the IOC are going to stump up for that draining of the.
I was going to say, I just like the fact that you're thinking like a supervillain.
I'd have gone the other way and said, let's all go train on Mars, on the mountain.
On the Olympic Mons.
And come back to Earth and compete.
Problem is, it's only 40% the gravity of Earth. So the weight that you are carrying is not as much going up the hill.
Gotcha.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. So there's some trade-offs there.
Some leaded suits.
Right.
Led yourself down. Another thing, once you've drained the Pacific Ocean, that had nothing to do with sports, just while we're on the topic. If you drain the Pacific Ocean, that is the great toilet bowl of dead satellites.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, because they always splash down in the Pacific.
Oh, they crash down.
Yeah.
If it's a dead satellite, they're not splashing.
They're not splashing down.
Yeah. So the reason why is the Pacific Ocean is almost a third of all possible longitudes on Earth.
Right.
So if you deorbit and you do it you have a lot of latitude, no pun intended, to where you begin the deorbit so that it's going to plunk down in the Pacific no matter what. And people don't live there, so not over the great bulk of the expanse.
Right.
So it's a safe place to drop your stuff out of orbit. The day we deorbit Hubble, it's going straight into
the
Pacific.
It's going into the Pacific Ocean.
Hubble, and it's the size of a Greyhound bus, by the way, if you don't know.
Nice.
Hubble telescope.
All right.
Yeah.
So this is one of my favorite.
Okay.
We actually talked about this in a different form on Star Talk, and it's swimming on Mars.
Okay. So here it is again, the same week. If there was swimming on Mars, the low temperature and low air pressure would force the pool to simultaneously freeze and boil.
Sweet. That.
How many hours does does Phelps have to train to cope with freezing and boiling simultaneously? Because he's up to about 50,000.
There it is, gurgling, and there are chunks of ice in there as well.
So at the exact at the same time. So can you explain that?
I don't know how you get to that situation.
How do you get to that situation?
Okay, so in chemistry, in physics as well, it's called the triple point.
Okay,
so which is a cool name. Triple point of a substance is the point where it is happy being solid, liquid, and gas all at the same time. Okay? So now that sounds freaky because it's outside of our common life experience.
Right.
But it's less so than you might think. So take a look at dry ice, okay, CO2. Right.
Okay.
That's in a double point of its state. So it is simultaneously a solid and a vapor.
Right.
It's happening all at once.
Yes.
Okay? You open the thing up, the vapor comes out, and it's solid.
Right.
So that's a double point that it's occupying. Right. That's not as interesting as the triple point.
But it does make for awesome concerts.
So here... so here's how I think they use other smoke for that. Rather, I think there's other.
They do.
They got that done.
They used to use dry ice back in the day, but you're right. They use smoke machines now.
80 years ago, yeah. When Twisted Sister performed in '03, you know. So here's how it works. You know that when you go to high altitude,
yeah.
It affects cooking times because water boils at a lower temperature.
Right.
You know this. Instead of 212, if we're all using imperial units, it could boil at 200 degrees or 180 degrees. Okay. So you have to increase the cooking time because the food is not at the high temperature for as long, and you can't get boiling water hotter than the temperature that it's boiling at.
Right.
All right? One of the earliest experiments I did with my kids, so they understood this. I would start boiling a pot of water. I give them a thermometer. I say, measure the temperature. And it's like 100 degrees. 3 minutes later, measure it again, 110 degrees, 120. They keep doing this. And I say, there's heat going into it. They say, yep, we see the flame. My kids are like 6 and 7 and 8. So then it's like 200 degrees. They check it again. 205, 210, 212. Okay, 10 minutes later, measure it again. Still 212. Where's the energy going?
Right.
Oh, my gosh, it stops going. Because water cannot be liquid at that temperature and at that air pressure.
Right.
It's got to become gas.
Become a gas.
Right. So now you lower the air pressure, the boiling point drops.
Right.
And the more you lower the air pressure, the lower the boiling point drops.
Right.
And eventually, the boiling point meets the freezing point of water.
Oh.
And now you have frozen water, liquid water, and boiling water all in the
same
pot.
Point. That's exactly. Great. Awesome. That's fantastic, man. That is fantastic. All right. So instead of getting into another one, why don't we, because we're up against the break, let's take a break and we'll come back with more.
No, I got to do this one real quick.
All right, go ahead.
Okay. Still Olympics on Mars?
Olympics on Mars.
Okay, I want to say, because my side of my eye caught it,
okay.
The corner of my eye, and I don't want to, we could pick it up after the break. But
okay. Go for it.
Women's beach volleyball on Mars. No protective ozone layer there. Solar UV would irradiate all exposed legs, buns, and tummies.
Wow.
They don't hardly wear clothes in women's beach volleyball.
Which is, you know, that's why I don't watch it, because I'm very, very modest.
So. Not that your wife doesn't let you.
All right,
let's
listen.
Let's do that break before we're in
take
trouble.
A break, and we're going to come back with more of Neil deGrasse Tyson's Tweets on Sports right after this.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you, like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the US on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.
Whether you're a family vacation traveler, business tripper, or long weekend adventurer, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. And that's good, because there are a lot of me's. Choice Hotels has over 7,400 locations and 22 brands, including Comfort Hotels, Radisson Hotels, and Cambria Hotels. Get the best value for your money when you book with Choice Hotels. Cambria Hotels feature locally inspired hotel bars with specialty cocktails and downtown locations in the center of it all. Hey, that's me. Radisson Hotels have flexible workspaces to get the most of your business travel and on-site restaurants. That's me, too. And at Comfort Hotels, you'll enjoy free hot breakfast with fresh waffles, great pools for the entire family, and spacious rooms. Hey, that's me, too. I guess I'm just going to have to stay at all of them. Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Book direct at choicehotels.com, where travel comes true.
Do you want to set up your child for success? Of course you do. Maybe you want to save money on private tutoring, or maybe it's just out of your budget altogether. Is this a big school year for your child? Like maybe they're starting kindergarten, middle school, or high school, or some other milestone. Maybe your family moved and they're starting at a new school. Is your child ahead? Not getting challenged enough in class? Well, we love that little smarty, but we want them to be engaged. IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids covering math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed to help them really understand and master topics in a fun way. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid, no matter the age or the personality. There's one site for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. Kids can use it at home on the computer or on the go through the app on your phone or your tablet. No more grading those worksheets. IXL grades everything itself. And no more trying to figure out how to explain math equations or grammar rules yourself. IXL has built-in explanation videos. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And Star Talk Radio listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/StarTalk. Visit IXL.com/StarTalk to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Welcome back. I'm Gary O'Reilly.
I'm Chuck Nice. I forgot who I was.
Okay. Don't worry, we're here for you. We're here. We're your backup team. And this is Playing With Science. We have Neil deGrasse Tyson with us.
We got to work on that. This is Playing With Science.
Okay.
Go.
Reprimanded. Okay.
No, I don't want
to. Right? No. You're in now. Now you want.
Okay.
You're wanting the gong back as well. And a butler and a servant. We
don't ever lose an opportunity.
Are playing with science, and Neil deGrasse Tyson is here with us, and his tweets, his many tweets, not opinions,
but they're tweets.
They're tweets. Okay.
Hey, before we jump back into it, I just realized something. So, everyone's once you, when you were talking about volleyball on Mars, burning the skin because no UV protection.
Yeah.
By the way, this Mars is farther away from the sun than is Earth.
Right.
So the, was it 1.4? Carry the 2.
Always carry the 2. Don't you get it wrong.
You'll get, so Mars has about one half the solar intensity.
Right.
Than does Mars. But so in any given amount of time, all other things being equal, it would take you twice as long to get to get sunburned. But Mars does not have a UV layer.
Right.
I mean, an ozone layer. Right, because there's no free oxygen on Mars.
Right.
So on Earth, free oxygen is the oxygen we breathe. That's O2.
Right.
Oxygen binds with itself. The ozone layer high up in the atmosphere is three oxygen atoms. And the reason why that blocks UV, do you ever wonder why?
I did not.
Okay. So this molecule is sitting there fat and happy in the upper atmosphere.
Okay.
And one of its bonds that binds these molecules together is the same energetics as that of an ultraviolet particle of light, an ultraviolet photon.
Gotcha.
Ultraviolet photon comes in, it is just what it needs to bust it open.
Right.
So the energy of the light is gone, and it got converted to breaking apart this molecule.
Right.
So basically ate the UV molecule, ate the UV photon.
Right, that actual molecular bond
becomes
a natural block.
Like
it's literally like a blocking tackle.
Literal block. And if there's a very close explosion to us in our solar system, supernova, you can calculate, because it takes a while to regenerate the ozone, right? Because it's a stable layer. You win some, you lose some.
Right.
Get remanufactured.
Thank you, Al Gore.
Okay, so watch what happens. So if you have a nearby supernova, which has a lot of UV, the waves of UV light take out your ozone, and then the next wave goes through without conflict.
Wow. The first wave,
just like an army. Right. It's exactly like army waves of armies. And so the ozone can only protect you so much before it has to rebuild itself if you have a major flux of UV coming in.
What's the timeline on a rebuild?
I have to calculate that.
Okay.
It has many sources. Lightning can actually regenerate. You can put energy back in to recreate this. Because different chemical reactions are exothermic and endothermic, and it's the balance of all of these that creates the chemical cocktail that is our atmosphere.
Nice.
So other mechanisms can regenerate it. And whatever those mechanisms are, you can construct actual things in the universe that will override them, such as supernova explosions. Yeah.
Wow. Any other planets or moons in our solar system with a similar ozone layer?
No, because we get our oxygen from life.
Right.
I used to think in Star Trek, oh, Captain, this is an oxygen-nitrogen atmosphere. We can go down and breathe it. I said, all we have to do is look around the universe for a planet that that happens to have the chemical mixture that Earth has.
Right.
And then I realized, no, that's not how it works. It's not that every planet's got its own mixture. It's that Earth has oxygen because we have life.
Right.
Because the photosynthesis, all the green plants make that oxygen, and that's like rocket fuel for animals. Then animals can now rise up, metabolize oxygen, and we have this harmony of plants and animals.
Sweet.
There you go.
I'm just saying.
All right. So let's move on to some other tweets, and we're going to kind of group these as, you know, kind of like to deal with ice. So think of it as like, you know, maybe skating on Enceladus or Europa or something like that. But you happen to have some skating facts that you tweeted about.
I wonder if this was during the Winter Olympics. This is February 2014. I don't remember the dates.
Yes.
Okay. So here's one.
So you're watching the Olympics in Sochi.
I'm loving me some Olympics. I love me some Olympics. Yeah, okay. This is titled Obscure Fact.
Okay.
By the way, I tweet 125 characters. Not 140.
You see, now you're just showing off.
Every single
By
time.
By the way.
Pretty much every single time.
You know, I try to leave
rare exceptions.
Characters.
Rare
I like to leave characters on the table. Just saying, in case I need them.
Just in case you need them.
In case you need them.
Then the bank, in the character bank. Okay, obscure fact. Skating is possible only because compressed ice melts. So skaters glide on slippery water, not on slippery ice.
Sweet. So now, are you saying that the friction between the blade and the ice?
Not the friction, the pressure.
The pressure between the blade and the ice is melting the ice so that there is an ever so thin layer of water that the skater is actually gliding, like a snail makes its little...
So is it lubricant?
Like slimy, makes its little slimy goo.
I've never heard skating analogized to snails. Snail slime?
Yeah. It's like snail slime.
Oh, yeah, it's exactly, yeah. Okay, Chuck, yeah. Who's the one that needed meds this morning? I don't know.
I think we're going to share.
Oh, you share?
So now, how is it?
So is this okay, surface tension?
Can we back up for a minute?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Because I'm really fascinated by this.
Generally, people's understanding of the word force is accurate to how we use it in physics.
Okay.
It's generally the same.
Okay.
Okay. I need more force to open this door. Okay. Right. So you put in a force. There's another term called pressure, which is less familiar as a physics term in the public. Okay. So pressure is force divided by the area over which the force is operating.
Gotcha.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So watch what happens. If I have a knife and it's not cutting because it's dull, I'm putting a force on that knife and it's not working. You have to ask yourself, what is the area of the cutting blade? What is the area of the thing that's touching the thing you're trying to cut? It's dull. So it's not very big. You know, let's say it's 1 square millimeter over the entire length of the blade, let's say.
Okay.
Okay? Now you sharpen the blade. What does that mean? You're reducing the surface area of the cutting edge. Right. Now it's 1/100th of a square millimeter. Because that stuff would, you can't even, and now the force divided by the area creates an enormous pressure.
Right.
So the lower the pressure, the lower the area is of that cutting blade,
the higher the pressure.
The pressure is for the same force that you're using to cut. That's why sharp knives cut. That's what it means when you sharpen a knife. You're shrinking the denominator of that equation. Pressure equals force divided by area. So if you've ever ice skated, I used to be a skating guard, actually, long ago. I use figure skates, by the way. When they quote sharpen skates, what you do is you actually put a concave cut. The bottom of the blade is concave.
That's right.
Okay. I don't know if you ever look closely at this.
No, I haven't. Every day's a school day.
Okay. Every day's a school day. So it's concave, the full length of the blade. So that means if you lean to the left or to the right, all of your weight is on basically a knife edge of the skate. And so that creates extreme pressure on the ice.
Mm-hmm.
And how thick is the ice? It's like a fraction of an inch. Did you know this?
Okay.
Ice skating rinks, it's like a fraction of an inch.
Didn't know that. Okay?
So now you put pressure on the top of that ice, and it melts the ice in the instant your skate comes over it.
Wow.
Okay? Now, but I didn't explain why the ice melts.
I was about to say.
That is one of the most profound facts in the universe. But are you ready? I don't know if you're ready for this.
Sat down anyway, so let's go.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Are you ready? Okay. Yes. So you're with me now that the sharper the edge, the higher the pressure.
Right.
Okay.
Yes.
You got that. All right. So now, we all know that ice floats.
Okay. Yes.
That is rare among substances. Usually, if you freeze something, cool it and freeze it, it gets smaller. Right?
Right.
But
okay.
Expands.
Water, however,
expands.
When it gets to about 4 degrees Celsius, by the way, water is shrinking down to about 4 degrees Celsius, not freezing yet. Freezing would be zero.
Right.
4 degrees Celsius. Then it says, I'm now going to get bigger.
Right.
So between 4 and 0,
right,
it becomes puffier. And it becomes less dense than the water it's sitting on, and it floats. Okay? That's why it is almost impossible to completely freeze a lake in the winter. Because if a chunk of ice forms anywhere, it floats. And you will freeze the top of your lake.
Mm-hmm.
And that will insulate the rest of the lake from the cold temperatures that are above it.
Right.
So it'll keep the temperature.
It basically prevents the bottom. So all the fish just get lower and lower and lower, and they hang out until springtime, and then they come back.
Right.
Otherwise, we would be killing all life forms in every lake for every winter. Okay? So now, watch what happens. Now, I now have this ice cube that is bigger in volume than what it's melted, than what it would be melted, okay?
Right. With you.
I want to now squeeze that ice cube. That's not allowed. You can't do that. Because the ice has to be that volume.
Got it. That's it.
Right.
It has to be that volume to be ice.
So it has to return.
Yes.
To
yes.
The state before you froze it.
Yes.
Which means that it's got to turn back to
it's
water.
It's got to turn back to water under pressure.
Oh my God, that is so awesome.
Okay. It's right. Got.
Okay.
Okay. Wait.
That's amazing.
No, it's freaking.
So wait a minute.
Wait.
So check this out.
Wait.
Can anyone else see that light bulb?
Chuck is
having
I love hanging
brain
with
orgasm.
Kind of stuff
Chuck is brain orgasming.
This little brain orgasm. So wait. I got to tell you this.
Okay. Wait. So by the way,
okay, go ahead.
This is also why pipes break in the winter.
Right.
What happens is water is sitting there. Okay. Mm-hmm. How come they don't break at? So water's sitting there in the pipe. Now watch what happens. So the water tries to expand. But the pipe is preventing it.
Right.
Okay? So you can get down to 31 degrees. No, nobody's pipes freeze at 31 degrees
right.
or 30 degrees.
Right.
You know, the water is still there contained. Okay? Then you reach a point where the pressure of the pipe can't keep this thing as water.
Right.
And the water changing state becomes more powerful than the frickin' copper pipe itself.
That's right.
And it says, I am now Iceman.
Right.
Bust out of the pipe, and it'll break practically anything. But if you make something that's kind of unbreakable, it'll stay water all the way down.
So check this out. With that in mind,
all right.
There, I love scotch, okay? I enjoy drinking some scotch,
okay.
Single malts.
Mm-hmm.
And they have these giant copper weights, and they are hollowed out so that it's a sphere on the inside of this giant copper weight.
This is in the vat where the...
Well, not where they're making it. This is for an ice cube so that you can make an ice cube to put in your scotch.
Without diluting your scotch. Oh, okay.
So what they do is they take a block of ice, they sit it, and they put the giant copper weight that is concave
yes.
on top of it. The pressure of the giant copper weight
yes.
pushes down on the ice,
yes.
and the ice melts into a ball.
Yes, yes.
And it's exactly what you were just talking yes, about, which happens when the skater is on the ice.
You know what also happened? You could take a screen, a grid, like a screen that would be on a screen door, but just to make this a little more interesting.
Right.
Increase the size of the screen hole.
Right.
Make it like maybe a half a centimeter on a side. Mm-hmm. And hold it horizontally. Take a block of ice
mm-hmm.
and place it on this screen. And it's got to be really heavy ice, and the screen is not too fine a grid. So what will happen is the ice in contact with the screen will feel the weight of the entire block, and it's going to melt it.
Right.
So it melts it. But just to get around the screen.
Right.
And it comes out on the other side. I am melted ice at 31 degrees because I was under pressure. But now I'm back to 30, did I say that right? It melts in a below freezing temperature. And when it comes out the other side, it just freezes again because it's no longer under pressure. So you come back in a half hour, half of the block has passed through the screen.
But it's still ice
it's
on the other
still
side.
Still ice on the other side.
Wow. And see this? And all this happens when you watch hockey and you don't even know it. Speaking of skating and ice, any tips for skating anywhere else in the universe?
Well, ice. Earth does not have ownership of all the ice that's going on. So Mars has polar ice caps, as does Earth,
yep.
that shrink and grow seasonally, as does Earth. And while we're there, Mars rotates about once every 24 hours, as does Earth.
Mm.
So that's why Mars is such an object of our affection as a possible second planet that we might inhabit after we trash Earth. But if you want to go beyond Mars, one of my favorite objects out there, celestial objects, is a moon of Jupiter called Europa.
Europa.
Ooh.
Love me some Europa. This is far beyond the warm habitable zone, the Goldilocks zone, where the temperature is just right to sustain liquid water. Too close, if you have water and you're too close to the sun, it evaporates.
Right.
Too far away, it freezes. Europa is well outside of this zone, but beneath this surface of frozen water is a liquid ocean. It's been liquid for billions of years. It is an energy source from Jupiter stressing the shape of Europa in ways that are not fundamentally different from, if you ever play racket sports, they say, let's warm up the ball.
Right.
Yes.
What are you doing? You are compressing the ball for every hit, and then the ball restores its shape, ready for you to smack it again.
Okay.
You are pumping energy.
So this is through gravitational.
Yes. So what's happening is they're what we call tidal forces that distort the physical shape of Europa. Mm-hmm. And as Europa goes around Jupiter, it's then distorted in another way. And then in another way. So it's constantly getting harassed
right.
by Jupiter and other surrounding moons. So that collects as energy deep within, and it melts the ice.
So it's like when you bend a paperclip back and forth, back and forth, back and forth.
So it's matter getting stressed and heat. And why does it get hot? You're putting energy into it by bending it back and forth.
So Jupiter is putting energy into
Jupiter
Europa.
And surrounding moons are conspiring to make this happen. Okay, so now watch. So you have a nice surface of ice on Europa. Mm-hmm. In principle, you could go skating there. However, this ice is not on top of a rigid surface as a normal skating rink would be. It's afloat an ocean. So what happens? The ocean moves, the ice cracks, water seeps up, refreezes. So there is no smooth Zambonified surface on Europa. So I don't know that I guess you could bring a Zamboni there. That would be a really wealthy civilization.
Hey, let's smooth out Europa, guys.
Just so we go ice skating on it.
Let's go sky. We're going yes, more than wealthy.
But a quick thing about Europa is, of course, I've said this many times. I want to go ice fishing on Europa, cut a hole and see if anything swims up. Did anything evolve in that ocean over the last billion years?
Yeah, but here's the thing. You bargain for.
I know. Yeah, you watch what you wish for. But I have colleagues of mine that said that might not be necessary. Because Europa keeps breaking apart and refreezing. Mm-hmm. When you break apart, the water gurgles up and then refreezes very quickly, mm-hmm. okay? Because it's a spontaneous crack.
Right.
Water. So you might be able to find fish that got caught in the updraft of the water.
Right.
And so then you're there, and it's just frozen fish. You didn't have to dig for it. Right. It's in the cracks.
Right. It's a TV dinner. Just waiting. It's a TV dinner. It's a Europa TV dinner.
Frozen food section.
Frozen food section. Yeah.
Frozen food section. There you go.
So it would be a very big challenge to smooth that out. And by the way, the surface of Europa looks just like what the North Polar regions used to be. It's ice sheets on an ocean because there's no land in the North Pole, mm-hmm. contrary to any representation of Santa you have ever seen at home. Because you think they have to show pine trees around his no.
That doesn't
the
happen.
Dude's on the North Pole. Right. He's on an ice floe, and he's no different from the polar bear that's about to be stranded because the ice is melting.
Right, so that means there's probably no reindeer up there either.
Not only that, he'll be overdressed for the warm weather that's to come. So in the future, there'll be Santa with fewer clothes on, sitting on the ice floe.
Don't worry, children. He'll be there next year for you. Don't worry about that bad Mr. Neal was saying.
I didn't mean to put that image in your head. Santa on a beach chair.
Yeah. That's why he's working on his abs. Yeah.
Santa abs, baby. Oh, there's also another moon, Enceladus. This is a fun moon because there are pressures under the surface. And when we think of Jellystone.
It's Yogi.
Yes, thank you. Yellowstone Park with the geysers and things.
Right.
Why are there geysers? The water gets heated. Pressure builds up. Mm-hmm. It blows.
Old Faithful.
Okay, it turns out after an earthquake, it's not faithful anymore. That's what you haven't heard about in the last decades. When was the last time anyone even mentioned All Faithful to you? Think about it. Yeah, so what I read was there was an earthquake and it messed with the under areas, and now it's just not faithful anymore. It's still blow.
It's still blow.
Not like clockwork.
Not the way it used to.
Yeah, not the way it used to.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's the old unfaithful. So,
ta-da!
So we've got, so Enceladus has geysers and volcanoes that blow from the pressure of evaporating ice rather than from the steam that would build up from high temperatures. Right. So on Enceladus, you've got geysers spewing, hurling chunks of ice.
Right.
Whoa.
And volcanoes that blow other chunks. So the pressure is from cold things subliming, evaporate like CO2 would.
CO2, right.
So it's the cold volcanoes. It's a fun idea.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
Theme park.
Fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Right. We're going to take a break. More of Neil's tweets, more of Chuck's discovery of ice and a brain orgasm, and me being quiet, probably learning lots. Join us in a minute.
All right.
Welcome back. I'm Gary O'Reilly.
I'm Chuck Nice.
This is Playing with Science. Before the break, we got a little bit glacial.
Yes.
And we learned plenty about ice, water,
and how ice skate, and how you cannot skate without pressure melting the ice so that you can glide on a little thin stream of water. Fascinating stuff.
Bead of water, and that water refreezes immediately.
Right.
On the other side, because it's not, the water is not above the melting point.
Right.
You just forced it into the liquid state under pressure.
And that self-healing.
That is
self-healing.
Self-healing ice. Good. Look at that. Yeah. And I'm sure that most people were under the impression that you're just carving through the ice, and that's what makes the skate work. But that's amazing.
And hence the way they sharpen the blade.
Right.
To make the thinnest possible edge on each side. And that's why in figure skating, it's that my daughter figure skates, and I did a little bit of it long ago. The most of what they do is on one edge or another edge.
And as
rarely are they ever just going straight forward.
And it's all about the curve because you're on the edge. And, that's how they judge
it. That's how they do all the fun things.
Yeah. So this is great. Let's move forward because right now
I just realized that this is like a cheap ass show because like I'm in the family and I'm your entire guest this whole show.
Yes. That was the idea.
Not some cheap.
Some people would look at that and saying, I'm that important, this whole show's about me.
No.
You took a different stance.
I'm just saying.
No, he took a different stance.
I see what you guys are doing here.
I know, you know, when I'm hosting the show, I'm getting people in and out from around the world.
Yeah, but Al Gore doesn't want to talk to us.
Okay, all right.
But he was very short.
Right.
Okay.
So let's jump into a little baseball.
All right, let's go summertime.
Before we look at the tweet on baseball, because you had a really interesting tweet about the slowest you could make a pitch, which made me think about...
In other words, there's a slowest possible pitch.
Slowest possible pitch, which can actually happen at the physics of a slowest possible pitch. But it also got me thinking about one of the most unique pitches in baseball, which is the knuckleball. And there's a guy by the name of R.A. Dickey, who throws the nastiest knuckleball in baseball. So let's take a look at this clip, and then I just want you to comment on the knuckleball for me. And
Toronto
what's
versus Boston.
Boston versus Toronto, and Dickey's on the mound, and take it away.
The Blue Jays, because R.A. Dickey's throwing today, Josh Tolan. He told me today, he said, trying to catch the knuckleball is tough. Trying to catch the knuckleball in the shadows on a 4 o'clock game is nearly impossible. So we will watch that tomorrow for Stephen Wright.
Yeah, might be a problem for Ryan Hannigan.
That's
Russell Martin will be back there for Marcus Stroman. Boy, that was a terrific knuckleball. That was
an 0-1 pitch to Blake Swihart.
Almost waved by to Blake Swihart.
What just happened there? I mean, that was a funky delivery. He took a little something off of it. It was wiggling, and then watched a swing from Blake Swihart. He swings, and... See, the bat just
nothing but air.
Nothing but air. And so, what the
a lot of air. Wasn't like he just came near the ball.
Not only the bat wrapped around his waist and then flew out of his hand.
Lost control of it.
So, but the thing that made that interesting is when you hear the announcer say, "The ball gets to the plate and just wiggles." So, what's going on from a physics standpoint in that instant?
So, what we know from basic physics 101 is, well, physics 102.
Okay.
How's that?
Second semester
is the stability of an object is improved and enhanced if you rotate it.
Yes.
So you might have heard the notion of something being spin stabilized.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So
you see it in NFL with the spiral.
Spin stabilized. So the spiral goes and it's very stable in that
configuration. Just a simple gyroscope.
Gyroscopes, for example. Planets are stable spinning objects. So we might spin a satellite to stabilize it in its location. So, all right. A knuckleball does not spin. It is therefore not spin stabilized. Mm-hmm. And if it's not spin stabilized, it is susceptible to any possible puff of air that goes transverse to its path to the plate.
Right.
So the slightest breeze will just take it.
Right.
And breezes are kind of, it's strong in one instant and a little less in another instant. And and we just take that for granted walking down the street. It's not always constant in your face.
You just give me an idea for one of our little mini-series.
What's that?
Weird science.
Weird.
Because that's weird. Because when we see a pitch, it does
It's only weird if you're unfamiliar with the science.
Which people are.
That's not as good a segment.
Think about it. All right. It's on the to do or to don't do.
All right. But for me, instead of weird that, science, weird. This segment is called It's Only Weird If You're Unfamiliar with the Science. But go ahead.
So a knuckleball. So one thing I would be interested in testing is if the air is perfectly still.
Mm.
And I would wonder whether knuckleballs in domed stadiums are as effective as knuckleballs in the open air stadiums. Oh. You can have, you know, in any stadium you've been in, the air can just come in and circle around.
Swirls around. It does all different kinds of things.
All kinds of different things. Right. And now you do have air currents in a closed dome.
Yes.
Because you have air conditioning ducts and they cycle the air.
You have doors that are opening and closing.
Right. So there's some air currents, but I would be curious, and I'm sure the sabermetricians, you know, the folks who calculate what every little detail that has ever happened in the history of baseball in the universe, maybe they have thought about this. I don't know, but I would guess that in a closed stadium, your knuckleball just does not do as many things as it would otherwise do. And it also means if it's a windy day, you can't even trust the knuckleball because the catcher will never catch it. Because it'll just go 1 foot away in an unpredictable way.
You end up throwing a ball every time if it's too windy.
If it's too windy, you can't even it's a crapshoot at that point.
So unpredictable. What's the worst that will happen if your catcher doesn't catch it? Or if the batter doesn't hit it. So what would you rather, if your catcher doesn't...
If the people on base, you don't want the catcher to not catch it.
But I'm just saying, if it's loaded...
Well, it matters. It changes the dynamic. Yeah. So the catcher doesn't catch it, the runner advances.
Right.
And it's a passed ball. So you're a Brit. Do you know the difference between passed balls and an error?
Nope.
Okay. So we have a Brit in the house. So the pitcher and the catcher handle the ball on every single play.
Right.
So they get a dispensation if they do something wrong for the fact of handling the ball in every single play. So if I, the pitcher, and I throw the ball and it's way outside, you can't recover it, mm-hmm. and the batter advance, it's not an error. It's called a wild pitch.
Right.
Right. With you.
And if I'm a catcher and I should have caught the ball, but I just messed up, it's called a pass ball.
Okay.
Those do not accrue to your record of errors.
All right.
Okay. Yeah. Whereas I'm a pitcher, it hits back to me and I throw to first base and I throw over the guy's head. Error.
That's an error.
Right. All right. I'm trying to catch the ball. I'm at home plate and it bounces off my web and goes over my head. That's an error. Mm. So catchers tend to have a lot of pass balls when they have pitchers who throw knuckleball.
Right.
Because they cannot anticipate. They cannot anticipate where the ball is going to be.
So with that in mind, you wrote a really cool tweet about baseball, and we were just talking about air currents.
Okay.
This is just the opposite. So go ahead and read your tweet.
You don't want to. Where's the tweet about the minimum speed of a throw?
Oh, that's
can
what,
we do
yeah,
that?
We got, yeah. the wrong, we got the wrong tweet up. I'm
okay.
sorry.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry.
So here we go.
Okay. So go into that. Mm-hmm.
So with that in mind, you wrote a tweet because the knuckleball, as you say, is kind of subject to the whims of air currents.
Yeah. And they don't tend to go very fast.
And
either.
They don't tend to go very fast.
You're a fastball hitter, you might just give up and go back to the dugout.
Right. Which brings me to this tweet that you wrote about slow pitches.
Yeah.
And so go ahead and read this one.
Okay. Slowest pitch in baseball to reach the catcher, 30 miles per hour, thrown at a 45-degree angle. Any slower and at any other angle, it hits the ground. So that is the slowest possible pitch.
And so here's what's funny about this not funny. Mm. Here's what I love about this tweet and working with you, period, is you say a lot of things and people, which I appreciate. I appreciate that people go behind you and actually say, okay, I'm going to see if this is right.
Well, that's good, but they're making trying to prove Tyson wrong as a sport.
Well, that's, listen, there's nothing you can do about that.
You can't be right. Let me try to. Yeah.
But the great thing is there is a guy, which we don't have it and it doesn't make a difference. He took your calculations and diagrammed it out and put it up on Twitter and was like, Neil deGrasse Tyson, absolutely right. This is the absolute, and it's the actual calculation is 30.4 miles per hour.
I rounded it.
Yeah. But it's 30.4 miles per hour thrown from, it has to be a 45-degree angle, factoring in the mound.
Yeah, the mound.
The mound is already factored in.
Yeah, yeah. And the catcher is not actually at home plate.
Right.
And the arm of the pitcher, the ball leaves the hand of the pitcher well forward of the of the rubber on the mound.
Right.
So you gotta
put those things.
I did a rough estimate to.
But the thing is that he actually proved your calculations in a diagram and put it up on Twitter, which I thought was fantastic. And that is the slowest. You can pitch
possible
a ball.
Pitch, and the thing about a 45-degree angle, we all know what that is. It's mm-hmm. equal amount forward as up,
right, yeah.
And you learn in physics 101 that it's an interesting question. How do I make? By the way, this comes from military Napoleon. I visited Napoleon's library.
Yeah,
on Elba when he was there.
All right,
an entire wall of engineering and physics books.
Mm-hmm.
So he wasn't just a little tyrannical guy.
No.
He knew not only how to make his cannon, he knew where the cannonball was going
to
fall.
Listen, you got to know where to put those cannonballs if you want to rule the world.
You got to know where your balls go, right?
So
if you want to hit your enemy as far away as they are, what angle should you put your cannon?
Right.
And you can calculate that angle for a given speed of the ball coming out of the nozzle, or whatever the hole, 45 degrees.
Right.
If you angle it higher than that, you're wasting some of the speed in altitude rather than in distance.
Right.
If you angle it lower than 45 degrees, it doesn't stay airborne long enough to go as far as it could have.
Right.
45 degrees maximizes the hang time and the distance so that you can go as far as you possibly can on that hit. Now, if they're closer than that maximum distance, then you'll want to adjust the height. Right. So what do you call those things that they go boof, boof, that they...
Mortars.
Mortars. Yeah, those...
Mortar shells.
Those, yeah, yeah. So that's a fixed speed that it comes out.
Right.
And if they're not as far away at the maximum speed, you got to change the angle higher.
Right.
And then so that's how you do it.
Those were what the first computers were used for.
Sweet spot of war, right.
Yeah.
So you apply that same calculation to a pitch, you get a 45-degree angle, 30-mile-an-hour pitch.
Sweet, man. I just thought that was really interesting.
Oh, that's why sometimes they have people, first pitch... ceremonial first pitches.
Right.
Mm. Sometimes people throw it, it just never makes it to home plate.
Right, because they throw it at 28.4 miles an hour.
See, and if you ever wanted to have the evidence of Neil thinking deeply about his tweets before he tweets them, that's exactly it.
That's it.
You've sat there, you've calculated, you've thought about it.
And just to be clear, it's not that I distracted my day to make that tweet. I just had that thought anyway,
right. Yeah.
And then I said, well, let me make it rigorous with the calculation. So that did take extra time. But this was a thought I was having anyway while I was watching a baseball game.
Cool. All right, let's get to probably will be our last tweet. What do we have?
The segment? Okay.
Next up.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you can play baseball on the airless moon, but only if you find a way to not suffocate.
Okay.
And if you don't care about curveballs.
Right.
Yeah, because a curveball requires a difference in pressure from one side of the ball to the other to have air alter the course of that ball. And curve it like Beckham, or what's the... Bendy Beckham. It's no different from what he's doing on when he can kick it forward, but with a spin, and he's relying on the aerodynamics of the ball moving through the air for the air to then push the ball sideways, looking like it has some magic arc to it, but it's really just aerodynamics.
Resistance.
Yeah. It's like, it's the aerodynamic version of putting English on the ball when you play billiards.
Right.
They call it putting English on the ball in the UK? Or is it putting American on the ball? What is it?
The answer is yes.
Yes, okay.
Well, Neil, I got to tell you, man, this was fantastic. Yes. So much fun.
We didn't get through most of my tweets.
No, we didn't.
We'll have to come back and do it all again.
Okay, I'll be a cheap date for you guys.
Nice.
I'm already
so
in the Star Talk family. Yeah. Just call me up and I come by because I'm a sucker for this thing.
Now, well, we certainly appreciate it, man. Seriously, that was a lot of fun. Very informative and, a little different twist on the show, so we're glad that we did it. All right.
Yeah, anytime.
I'm Gary O'Reilly. You're Chuck Nice. This has been Playing with Science, but if you think about it, we've spun the Playing with Science just a little bit differently. So thank you to Neil deGrasse Tyson, who has been entertaining as always, informative, and a great sport for going back through all of those tweets over the recent years.
Thank you. So
from us on Playing with Science, see you all soon.